coming up. This is July 15th, I do believe, and we're sitting here in a hot day in Illinois. It's about 96 degrees. We got some very, very important information that we need to discuss tonight. Approximately 20-some years ago, the United States made a conscious decision, along with other coalition nations, to launch what's known as Operation Desert Storm. In Operation Desert Storm, the initial intent was to eject Iraq, who had invaded Kuwait, from Kuwaiti and, again, secure the oil fields there and everything else. As a consequence of Operation Desert Storm, and at this time, we had less than 1,000 casualties. That's included those wounded in action and those killed in action during the actual combat phase of the operation. One thing that we do know has happened, and again, I was totally involved in this at the Theater Command Headquarters, Bowers Raiders, and our team was thoroughly involved, is that we had very, very complex exposures to all kinds of toxic materials, in addition to the stuff that happened with all of the munitions and everything, so wounded in action. What we do know happened during Gulf War, the U.S. military and the coalitions, and again, the Iraqis, everybody, were absolutely exposed to chemical agents. We had the deliberate destruction of well over 100 Iraqi bunkers containing chemical warfare agents, releasing complex exposures to all of these nerve agents. These nerve agents included sarin, cyclosarin, Tabun, Soman, VX, Multiple 7, and the Novichoks. In addition to that, we had all the immunizations, which created a total nightmare. And again, everybody is thoroughly aware of the anthrax, botulinum toxins, the flu, the GG, and all the other immunizations for those regions. Again, the anthrax and botulinum toxin were experimental vaccines that created a nightmare. We were ordered right in the very beginning, as we started to administer those vaccines, not to record who got what the reactions were, who got sick, or how much they got it, when they got it. In addition to that, we had all the radiological materials. A lot of the Iraqi equipment and U.S. equipment contains radioactive isotopes. In addition to that, when we destroyed the infrastructure in Iraq, we released radioactive isotopes that were involved in agriculture, science, medical research, and everyday life. Just like when you're building a road, you have radioactive isotopes that are used in that. In addition to that, we had very complex endemic diseases throughout that way. We've discussed leishmaniasis on our program before. In addition to that, we had all the hazardous materials. Again, the hazardous materials all came about from just like operating a military and all of the communities we destroyed and everything, hazardous materials were released all over. Again, that's very similar to what we have today with Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And again, the complex exposures from the burn pits and the confirmation from the Army well over a year ago that this did cause health problems and medical care was required for everybody. So we had very complex hazardous material stuff. In addition to this, we had pesticide misuse. Incredible amount of pesticides were required just to sustain life over there. However, the pesticides were totally misused, and pesticides that were approved by the EPA here didn't get there, and we bought pesticides in the open market, and again, incredible problems with pesticides. In addition to that, we had incredible problems with biological agents. Again, everybody is probably familiar with the Toot report. This is a Regal Commission report that Jimmy Toot wrote, confirming all the biological and chemical agents that were shipped to Iraq by the United States. And again, we know anthrax, weaponized anthrax was shipped there. We went to West Nile virus, a whole bunch of other diseases and everything else was shipped over there and given to it. Then we had all the oil well fires, incredible, incredible complex exposures from the oil well fires. And when we look at the constituents of the releases in the oil well fires, it's the who's who of toxic chemical compounds, carcinogens, volatile hydrocarbons, and everything else. A very, very complex problem. As I've discussed, and because I was a depleted uranium expert for the Army and ordered by Schwarzkopf to clean up that mess, depleted uranium was a total, total nightmare. Well, all of this stuff came to a head. And Denise, have you joined us yet?
Yes, I'm with you, and we want to jump right in.
Great. So what had happened, we had very complex exposures. And I myself didn't come out of the Army until it was about 1997 or 1998. I was deep inside trying to get all this stuff done. But Denise, you had came back and immediately got involved at congressional levels and trying to get help for everybody, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And could you give a little of a history of what happened and what has all led up to the Binns report in 2008?
Okay, well, first of all, as far as what happened, everything seems to have been slanted toward writing everything off on the fiscal exposures that you just went through briefly to stress, to PTSD. The only way we could get soldiers compensated was going toward PTSD. And we fought to get the physiological exposures identified and to get work started on it to see what's the damage to the body from all these exposures, this complex mess of 20-something exposures. I think there was 26 items in Senator Riegel's report, which even includes electromagnetic field and everything else.
That's also another nightmare. I was involved in setting up the control factors for that.
So anyway, we have been working on it, and everything was directed towards stress. We started the hearings in 93, 94, 95. Then we had Congressman Shays get involved after Riegel and Rockefeller had been involved. And Congressman Shays of the Government Reform and Oversight kind of took on the role of looking at the Gulf War illness for over 3 years and with the anthrax vaccine for 2 years, I believe it was. And in the meantime, occasionally we'd have VA committee hearings, Senate and House VA committee hearings. But it's been a battle because they wanted to write it off as stress, PTSD. And when you have things like brain cancer showing up, ALS, MS, the neurocognitive problems, we're showing Parkinson's now, other cancers are showing up, cardiac problems at our early age group.
And incredible neuromuscular problems.
Incredible respiratory problems and GI problems. So it's a massive effect of massive exposures. So it's been a battle, and we did get legislation that was supposedly going to help us with our claims, with presumptions for a lot of the symptoms, the irritable bowel, the chronic fatigue, the fibromyalgia. And we fought, you know, to get the ALS coverage not only for Gulf War vets, but for all veterans now. We have fought to try to get MS vets taken care of. They're taking care of, I believe, pretty well the brain cancers that come up. But all the other symptoms, it was a battle. But we got a bill through that listed the symptoms, the problems. And so it was supposed to be faster and easier to get the claim through. Well, that hasn't worked out too well, and they seem to deny and delay those claims that we had a law for. But in the meantime, we were fighting to prove that it was not stress, that it was physical damage. So we were fighting to get them to do the right research. And like I said, money was going mad. I mean, just mad money chasing the stress thing. And it seems like it was very well planned. And we've had to fight them to say, you need to look at the physiological damage. We had Perot and Haley came in through Mr. Perot and Haley being with UT Southwest. We had other doctors. I can't even think of all of the doctors that we've had that stood up for us on the different issues. But it's been a small core. And trying to get funds for their research. And we've talked about that before, of how Haley's study has gotten cut off and various things that happened. But we got through one of the bills. That last one we passed was in 2000, signed in 2000, the Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness.
This is with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs under Mr. Jim Binns, correct?
Right. And this was in addition to any IOM, National Academy of Studies, that they do, which is mainly peer review of looking at what's printed, not even looking at the non-printed or the reports from the war. And it's in addition to what we have with the Presidential Advisory Committee, the Presidential Special Oversight Board, the Office of Special Investigation. I mean, we've gone through every rat maze I think there is. Now, the RAC has been meeting since the law passed in 2000, and it was sent with another law to be sure they didn't conflict. to the Justice Department. So it really didn't get enacted and started at the RAC, Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness Research, until 2002. Then we've had to battle with them of the wording, you know, different from Vietnam. How's it different? Because they put more stringent controls on Gulf War Illness than on Agent Orange. And it says slight wording changes that are really detail-oriented, and we could go over that at another time. But Mr. Jim Benz has testified to that very clearly over and over, starting in 2002, I believe, of the changes of what they're expecting us to do. We've had to fight to get really good research. So the next effort was by Dennis Kucinich, representative, and Senator Sanders, who was a representative with the Shades Committee before. And they've helped us since 05 to fight to get a separate fund of money. It is, again, through the DoD, but, you know, it's hard to go independent with military stuff. But, so we fought starting in 2005 to get funds for 2006, and we started at $5 million that year. And we've had to fight for every penny. The most we ever got in 1 year was $10 million. And I can tell you from the first year that I sat on the peer review, we had 33 studies, only had $5 million. I think I added it up that if we approved everything, it'd be $23 million. So it's a very competitive situation. And we're looking for the best. We're looking for biomarkers, diagnostic tools, and most of all, treatment. So we've had that going on, and yet the VA has still funded research that hasn't really met the mark. They've misspent money. DoD cut off the funding in 9/11, after 9/11. So the only funding we got through DoD was the funding that we fought for annually for CDMRP, which is Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, Gulf War Illness Research. Now, we had a landmark 2010 study by the Institute of Medicine. It was the first study that finally came on the side of the Gulf War vets. And it was a very strong study that finally recommended that we needed a renewed research effort with substantial commitment to well-organized efforts to diagnose and treat Gulf War illness. And Dr. Can't think of his name right now, the chairman of that committee that's from University of California, San Francisco, said this is doable, but you've got to commit the funds and we can make headway. So that was in 2010. The RAC has struggled with working with the VA and being an advisory group, and every year they kept funding studies and we'd look at them and they go, you know, this is stress studies again. Where's the studies we really need for the physiological damage? And we buy them every year.
I think one thing that's extremely important, and I'm going to go over this too, because in 2008, the Research Advisory Committee, again, Gulf War Veterans Illness, as Jim Benz was the chair, they published their report, Gulf War Illness and the Health of Gulf War Veterans, Scientific Findings and Recommendations. And in this report, very at the beginning, their findings in brief, and I want to read this quote, each one of the bullets. Gulf War illness is a serious condition that affects at least one-fourth of the 697,000 U.S. veterans who served in 1990-1991 Gulf War. Number two, Gulf War illness fundamentally differs from trauma and stress-related syndromes described after other wars. Three, evidence strongly and consistently indicates that two Gulf War neurotoxic exposures are causally associated with Gulf War illness. The use of pyridostigmine and bromide, these are the PB pills given to protect troops from the effects of nerve agents, and pesticide use during deployment. For several Gulf War exposures and associated with Gulf War illness cannot be ruled out. These include low-level exposure to nerve agents, close proximity, oil well fires, receipt of multiple vaccines, and the effects of combinations of Gulf War exposures. Next. Other wartime exposures are not likely to have caused Gulf War illness for the majority of ill veterans. And again, there's some stuff, again, we run into all the stuff where they're denying the stuff between depleted uranium and anthrax, fuel, solvent, sand, and everything else, which is and CARC, which we knew from day one, and the actual reports, as you've seen, prove that those are serious health problems. Golf illness associated with diverse biological alterations that must prominently affect the brain and the nervous system. Golf illness has built similarities and differences with multi-symptom conditions in the general population. And next, studies indicate that Gulf War veterans have significantly higher rates of ALS than other veterans, that Gulf War veterans potentially exposed to nerve agents have died from brain cancer at elevated rates. Again, members of my team did. Important questions remain about the other Gulf War health issues. Federal Gulf War research programs have not been effective historically in addressing priority issues related to Gulf War illness and the health of Gulf War veterans. And the last finding, this is from 2008, and I'm reading these direct, a renewed federal research commitment is needed to identify effective treatments for Gulf War illness and address other priority Gulf War issues. So we're looking at, you know, the findings from the Research Advisory Committee were very, very clear.
Right.
What happened
was the VA-RAC has really stood up for the veterans and collected all the documentation and tracked it and tried to work with the VA. Now, they have been working with them since they started meeting. In the last year and a half, it's become really contentious because the VA just keeps doing their thing, and it doesn't seem like anything changed. Well, we got some new people at the VA Research Development, and we got some new people that took Mark Brown's place. So we were hoping that changes would happen. There was a meeting in late January that everybody came together looking at the strategic plan for research and thinking that they were going to work together and input and work it together. Well, that all changed because in June they had a meeting and the VA had ignored all the input, all the work that the RAC had done trying to, you know, get this together and run it right. Now let me read the six main findings from their latest Research Advisory Committee report.
Now, Denise,
the 46-page no confidence report was delivered, and there's a whole lot in that 46 pages, but let me just summarize the six, and then we'll go on. VA misled Gulf War illness research, focusing on efforts against Gulf War veterans rather than working to improve the health. VA misrepresented scientific conclusions about Gulf War illness and the efforts being made to address it, including whitewashing the Gulf War illness out of a major groundbreaking consensus-developed strategic plan that had previously been aimed squarely at Gulf War illness treatments. Number three, VA ignored the public panels, including in a major national study that ignored Gulf War illness and instead focused largely on long discredited stress and psychological issues. Four, VA slashed the Gulf War illness research budget by two-thirds, from $15 million per year to less than $5 million per year. Five, VA failed to follow the law by not contracting with the IOM to research multiple sclerosis among Gulf War veterans as mandated by Congress. Six, VA failed to follow the law again by not researching treatments for physical ailments as mandated by Congress instead of focusing on scientifically discredited stress and psychiatric theories in a new IOM treatment panel created this year. Okay, those were the summary points, and I can give you some tips and clues as we go through that 46-page document. Did you want to say something before I gave some ideas on that?
Yeah, I think this is extremely important because what I want to back up to for a moment is to actually look at the casualty numbers associated with Operation Desert Storm. In February of 2008, the Gulf War Veterans Information System, published by the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, listed the casualty numbers and those that had applied for permanent disability, what's called compensation and pension, through the Department of Veteran Affairs, and dealt with all this stuff. In February of 2008, the Department of Veteran Affairs confirmed that the number of service members that had been deployed for Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and Desert Fox, and Desert Farewell, that's all of the four operations, was 696,842. In February of 2008, now I'm looking at the actual Griffiths report from the VA, out of the 696,842, in February 2008, only 618,283 remained alive. So that's well over 70,000 have died in the intervening years. So this was 2008, so 17 years. As of February 2008, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs had received 278,713 claims for CNP associated with the health effects of Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm. 278,000. In February 2008, they had processed 241,434. They granted 221,960 individuals permanent disability as associated with health effects from Operation Desert Storm. Now, the other thing that we do know is, again, the VA has recently, again, this was back in March and came out in April, released a new report dealing with Gulf War illness and everything else. And in this report, when General Shinseki gave the directive to do this, he acknowledged at that time in his directive that there was well over 300,000 now that had survived Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, that were still alive. This is a year ago, 2 years ago, that had now applied for permanent disability with the VA, and it was well over 85% had already been granted disability. So incredible, incredible medical problems. So when we look at the numbers, and again, the Department of Veteran Affairs numbers, the Department of Defense numbers, when we look at this stuff, the internal documents between the VA and everything, are admitting or acknowledging that the casualty rate for disease and non-battle injuries up and beyond wounded in action is well over 50%. And so this is catastrophic numbers. Now,
and then we look at their Gulf War research budget. It was cut by two-thirds for fiscal year 2013, from 15 to 4.86 million.
Yeah,
and of that 15 that was budgeted and approved by the Secretary and Congress, only 4.98 million was spent. The two-thirds cut was never discussed with the Research Advisory Committee. Then we go on to focusing on the strategy, which they, you know, I told you that from January to June meeting that everything fell apart. And what we found out then is that it had changed from a focused strategy to execute the ILM's call for a renewed research effort to better identify and treat the multi-symptom illness into an unfocused expenditure of research money across any illness experienced by any Gulf War veteran. Under the change plan, VA is not obligated to allocate any amount to Gulf War illness research. The VA Office of ORD can spend that $4.86 million budgeted in 2013 on any illness, however few there may be of the number of Gulf War vets, like renal cancer, for example. Okay? They can subdivide it out and put the money there and not hit the greater number of what we really need to focus on. So they're just, they're not getting the total viewpoint of what's really going on here. It's eliminated the urgency, the focus, the follow-up, and the teeth built into the original plan. I mean, there's just, you've got to have a plan. And they sabotaged the plan that had been worked up. The VA research continues to misrepresent to the Secretary of Veterans Affairs and to Congress in their annual report the level of research dollars spent addressing the health of Gulf War veterans. The true figures are vastly overstated by the inclusion of funds spent on studies that have little or nothing to do with Gulf War veterans. And then we had the new study for Institute of Medicine that was supposed to look at treatment. It was supposed to be very mission-focused. Well, again, they slanted it towards stress. And one example was one of the meetings they had, I think, eight speakers lined up. Out of the eight, five were on the psychological stress. It's like we backstep to the very beginning again. To give you another example, money, let me just scan down here and get to the part I wanted to point out. They say that the researchers at VA are not interested in Guffor illness, but yet they come over and apply for the DoD CDMRP study that's open to any researcher worldwide. Doesn't have to be DoD or VA. I mean, we can get somebody from outstanding universities, Nobel Peace Prize recipients or nominees, okay? But yet the VA is not using their money that was supposed to be for that with their researchers. And they're saying, well, they're not interested. And they don't even focus. If you go to the ORD on the annual meetings, they have big annual meetings, there is not one mention in any abstract posted, like for poster sessions, or in the agenda item going back. I went back to 2007, I believe. Nothing on Guffor at all spoken about at their annual research meeting. I think that tells you a lot right there. So this is a deliberate pattern, Doug, is what it gets down to. And we've got to stand up. All Americans should stand up and notify their congressmen, their representatives, anybody running for office. This needs to be discussed. Let me give you an example. One of the appendixes in reduction of the VA Gov War research budget, and they list all the things they can, research and development program funding. It's listed pain, post-deployment mental health, sensory loss, spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury and other neurotrauma, prosthetics, women's health, Gov War illness. The ones that were decreased in 2012 and 2013, the only ones with a decreased amount was sensory loss, spinal cord injury, and Gulf War illness. And effectively, that was where the cut happened to us for, you know, going into our current year that we're in. That's significant. The other areas were increased. Now, they have a million veteran program that they're starting. And that is I think it's a World Health Organization study on genetics, taking all the blood samples and running the genetic studies. But I don't think this is an effective means of spending money. In fact, we are looking at that closer, and there'll be a new article out about that, that they're stealing money from Gulf War illness research to fund their million veteran program. So, you know, they cut our program at a time that we really need to be very focused, be having everything targeted to diagnosis and treatment, and they're sabotaging and they're hurting. They are participating in hurting patients, and they still are not educating their doctors to keep them educated of what the truth is and research to provide them. The VA RAC report that you mentioned, the Institute of Medicine one in 2010, if you ask doctors about that, they have no idea. They have no idea what's going on, unless some of us have gotten into the VA and taught like you have, like I have, and trying to get the information out. The VA Office of Research and Development tries to explain this cut on the grounds that VA researchers not interested. I've already talked about that. They do little to attract the interest if they're not even mentioning it in their annual big meetings that they spend a lot of money having and having people there. The vast majority of the research extends list in the VA Guffor research portfolio for the ORD at VA headquarters. Let me give you an example. $5.7 million, okay, for the Gulf War Biorepository Trust. Now, we asked for that because we wanted, if vets die, we need the brain tissue to get more clues than you can get any other way and maybe help the living ones quickly. And so they set that up. And as yet, and this started in 09, 10, and 11, and of the $5.5 million spent toward the that's another thing. Let me go back. On the ALS Brain Bank, there's only one Gulf War veteran brain. All the others are ALS brains, not specifically Gulf War. Now, we set it up for Gulf War illness, neurocognitive problems, not for ALS. So they kind of convoluted that. Then you go into the next thing that they did is that we have to track what they're doing every minute of the day. They took $5.5 million for the research and spent it toward the purchase of an MRI scanner in fiscal year 2010, and they already had an MRI scanner out there within a quick commute out in California. So that was misspent. So it's trying to get everybody working together and doing the best they can, and it's not working. They're going backwards.
Okay, we've had a discussion here. Let's get down to some fundamentals, all right?
Okay.
This is extremely important. I'm looking at the epidemiology for Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, Operation New Dawn. And as you know, the epidemiology for the disease and non-battle injury casualties for Desert Storm matches for OIF and OEF. We know for Operation Desert Storm, confirmed from the Department of Veteran Affairs in the 2008, they had over 280,000 of the remaining 500 some that were, you know, seriously having serious medical problems. And Shinseki, when he ordered this last study, confirmed over 300,000. Now, that's incredible numbers. Now, when we look at the casualties, disease, and non-battle injury casualties, and again, this is a months-old report for Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, we're looking at 750,000. And the thing that astonished me, and again, we found this at the Center for Disease Control Study, and Denise, you were there with me when we got appointed back in 1999, and poor our old buddy Mikey Kilpatrick was madder in blue blazes because they bypassed some of our other guys and appointed you and I, and Andres Kornegiboth, who's now deceased. But what we're looking at is 15% of the active military people that have served over there. And again, we're looking at over 50% of the National Guard and Reserve and over 50% of the active duty. We're looking at 15% of individuals with infectious and parasitic diseases. We're looking at cancers at 1.5%, 1.5% of malignant cancers. Benign tumors and everything, we're looking at over 6%. When we look at endocrine, nutritional, metabolic problems, we're looking at 31%. When we look at leukemias, and again, I've been on an airplane. I was on an airplane going into the Army War College there in Pennsylvania, and individuals, he was being brought back from Iraq because his wife and the child had developed leukemia, again, from depleted uranium, confirmed. PTSD, mental conditions, again, incredible stuff. We're looking at well over 50% of the force. Nutritional and nervous system, sensory organs, we're looking at 44%. Cardiac and respiratory. And Denise, you brought this up day one a long time ago with all these complex exposures. We're seeing, as is totally confirmed, these individuals are gotten doing PT or they're working or whatever, and all of a sudden they're having massive sudden cardiac arrest and they're dropping dead in their 20-year-old kids. Respiratory, we're looking at well over 26%. We start looking at the digestive system, the explosive diarrhea, the constipation, everything. We're looking at 36%. Genitourinary, we're looking at 15%. The rashes and everything, the rashes have devastated not only Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, but again, Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. We're looking at the rashes up there at 21%. The muscular skeletal system, this is all of this stuff. Again, we get fibromyalgia is confirmed amongst everything from Desert Storm. We're seeing fibromyalgia again in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. We're seeing all the spinal cord injuries. But again, over 50% of those people that have already gone to the VA are receiving care for that, 56%. The ill-defined conditions, and again, you saw this right up front, Denise, as a nurse when you were doing medevac up in Iraq-Saudi border at 51%. Injuries and poisonings were looked at 28%. So when we look at incredible, incredible, horrific diagnoses, and these are not related, as we know, totally unrelated, these are not the wounded in action. These are not individuals with bullets or bombs. These are what we call disease and non-battle injury casualties. So when we look at the same proportions across it with Operation, whether it's Desert Storm or Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, we're looking at horrific, horrific numbers. Now, Rick Mays in the Army Times published a report on VA Tauf's new training letters for claims workers. This was published on Tuesday, July 10th. And in this story, Rick Mays for the Army Times, the staff writer there, cited the fact that, quote, VA's weekly status report shows that at the start of business on Monday, that's last Monday, 918,819 benefit claims were pending, with 608,055 pending for more than 125 days. That's an incredible, incredible casualty rate. So we're looking, totally confirmed, I mean absolutely confirmed, we're looking at close to a million casualties of disease and non-battle injury. They have claims pending against the VA. We have 750,000 already from Operation Enduring Freedom, Iraqi Freedom in medical care. We have over 280,000 from Operation Desert Storm trying to get medical care. We're going down, and too many of those guys are dying. I mean, I've lost too many of my team, and you know those individuals, Denise. It's a devastating problem. And I think the whole thing comes down to it. We have to look at when we went to war, what happened, what were the exposures, what occurred, how did it occur, why did all of those recommendations that we put in place at the very beginning in 1990 and 1991, why were they ignored and not complied with to provide medical care? So when we look at pesticide exposures, we know the neurological, neuromuscular, and all of those associated problems, the eye problems, the hearing, everything that's going to happen, the whole gastrointestinal system. And yet that stuff was ignored. As you know perfectly well, on depleted uranium, I issued the actual original order for mandated medical care for depleted uranium exposures. That order, and Denise, you've seen it, and it's out there for people to get. That issue order was issued by the 3rd MedCom commander in June of 1991, mandating medical care. We'd identified everybody. And we came on through, and again, General Shinseki, who's now head of the VA, personally signed the order mandating medical care for all of us in August of 1993. And yet, when we look at the reports, again, what we're doing now, you've got the RAC voting no confidence in the VA for a whole host of things that they've not done. But yet, when Colonel John Gingrich issued the latest report on Desert Storm with recommendations for medical care, in there they said that they had been following 79 individuals for depleted uranium. Well, I had 123 that survived the friendly fire, and we had over 300. So as you know, Michael Kilpatrick and his staff that briefed the PSOB back in 1998, that there were 424 on my immediate team that needed medical care, much less the thousands and thousands of others. And again, when I spoke to individuals at the War Injuries Clinic in Washington, D.C. again the other day, as you know, we had an individual I finally got up there to care who had DU shrapnel in his body, and the shrapnel had never been removed, and we were trying to ensure that his medical care was done, and again, covering up everything that we knew could possibly happen. So it's devastating. But they come on down again, and that report denying any correlation between the health effects from depleted uranium, which is totally confirmed, in order to avoid liability. So we're seeing a consistent pattern, and this is what I'm just so irritated and upset about, is we knew all of these toxic exposure synergistic relationships, which has an effect, as you remember the CDC, Colonel Anders Corney Bach brought this up very, very strongly, as did other individuals, again, we were working with them, that it's not any single thing, but it's a very complex thing, and where in the past, NIOSH or OSHA might say this is the level of toxic exposure for whatever we have. When we have all of these toxic exposures having the same effect on the same system within the body, physiological system, we have very, very low levels that have horrific health effects. And as a consequence, we're seeing these incredible numbers. So, I mean, how do we tell the American public? And again, this is one thing that's been hidden from everybody. When I meet with congressional staff or we meet with VA staff or anybody, the VA doctors don't know that there's over 300,000 disease and non-battle injury casualties up and beyond the wounded in action from Desert Storm. They don't know that there's over a million claims in the process with the VA already or have been processed for our Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. And then the research that's necessary to confirm all of these complex toxic exposures and health effects, and as you pointed out, how to identify the biomarkers and everything, has just been thrown away to the wolves. Well, it goes back to decision, and we've talked about this, and we've got it all in place, especially for depleted uranium. The order was issued to disregard the health and environmental effects, avoid all liability for the incredible casualty numbers, not only in the U.S. military, but in the coalition forces, and not only in the U.S. military and the coalition forces, but the so-called enemy, but up and beyond that is the incredible casualty numbers in the non-combatants, whether they were in any of these countries were involved in, or as you've been totally, and you and I've been totally involved in, the non-combatant casualties living around the bases or that where the contaminated equipment came back to the bases. So, I mean, I know this is a total, complete nightmare with incredible casualty numbers for which very few people want to discuss or bring it all up. And now we have the RAC trying to get the information out, trying to get it done right, and they are what, stymied at best?
Well, they are an advisory committee, and they are doing everything they can. I mean, and the VA ORD is stymieing it, directing it. It's a different way, misspending money, cutting funds, spending what funds we do in the wrong direction. I have no confidence left in VA ORD, even though they've changed people in January. We had hope. We had hope in January that things were going to change finally. And then we came to the meeting in June, and, they had the draft reports that I put out on Facebook and also put out on Veterans News Now. And then they, come home for 2 weeks and work more details to put it all together. And they are going to the Hill, showing the people that need to know just how bad the VA has behaved. There needs to be some criminal charges. This is criminal that we've gone 21 years, that they've pushed people to stress and PTSD and psychological, and that treatment will not help our Gov War veterans. It will not. We need targeted research toward diagnosing it appropriately, just like Dr. Haley has tried, Dr. Dane Cook in Wisconsin presented, and I cannot pronounce the good doctor from Minneapolis that is doing the high-tech MEG scanning, which has showed where the damage is on Gulf War veterans separate from psychological stress. We have the diagnostic capabilities being worked, but they're not using it. They're not using it out there to help, diagnose truly what is going on with the Gulf War vets, much less then focusing and trying to find appropriate treatment. And to me, it brings up my memories of when we were at the big national scientific building across from the wall up in D.C. on Constitution. And, they didn't like what you had to say or what I had to say.
They didn't like what Sergeant Major Sauer said either.
And I told them at that point, this is malfeasance. And that was how many years ago now? And it's gone on. We're at 21 years. If we're going to do anything, we need big-time focus, just like the doctor from University of California, San Francisco, Dr. Haley, and all of them have said, this is doable if we focus and have the right amount of funding to get the work done. We can take medicines off the shelf, see if it'll help, run a small trial to see if it'll help. If it doesn't, then we have to go into new drug development. But we're not getting anywhere close to that with VA behaving the way they are. And they are contributing to the deaths. because when they are not looking in the right direction, besides treating them for PTSD and giving them psychotropics, and, you know, trying to get a referral out of the psychologist back to, you know, mainstream medicine, neurological medicine, you know, neurologists, you know, getting the information out to them of what tests need to be run, you know, get them run, diagnose these people correctly, and work on finding treatment options for them. That's all we're saying, is improve the quality of life. We probably, I never like to be negative about finding a cure, okay, but we can certainly find treatments, give a better quality of life, and help them be more functional. And that would help us to keep people from being totally disabled. It'd help their mental, emotional, and financial abilities for their family. But, you know, no one will listen to that side, and they just want to deny it and send it into a spiral into the ground, and that's what they've been doing for 21 years. And we have to have the American public wake up to this tragedy. This is a miscarriage of medical care. It's malpractice because your omission of diagnostic, omission of appropriate care.
I think the other thing, too, in this, again, as we prepared for this program, again, the Benz report and the RAC vote of no confidence in the VA was devastating. But then on Friday, Patricia Kimmy, a staff writer with the Army Times, wrote a report, DOD does not know if PTSD programs work, end quote. Quote, the Defense Department has a woeful lack of information on the effectiveness and related costs of post-traumatic stress disorder treatment programs, despite having spent millions on various initiatives to address psychological health and traumatic brain injury, a panel of top scientists concluded, and this is a brand new Institute of Medicine report that came out. So we're looking at the same thing. We go on. The other thing that the IOM concluded, treatment isn't reaching everyone who needs it, and the departments aren't tracking which treatments are being used or evaluating how they work in the long term, said the committee chairman, Dr. Sandro Gea, head of epidemiology at the Department of Columbia University. So again, now we have another withering report, as Patricia wrote, comes as DOD and VA grapple with the rising mental health issues within their ranks, including suicide, end quote. It's, why do we keep going to war? Why do we create all these casualties? Why do we use a weapon system? Why do we contaminate air, water, and soil, creating millions and millions of casualties for which they have no intention of providing prompt and optimal medical care for? I mean, I'm an old NCO and an officer and a medical officer, and you are also. I don't even know where to begin to think or what to do, because it's day in and day out where I speak to individuals that have been abandoned.
Abandon it. And it's a betrayal. It's a betrayal of the contract we signed to serve under. And, you know, a lot of American citizens go, well, you weren't drafted, you volunteered, so, you know, you deserve it or whatever. No, we stand behind our servicemen and women, and standing behind them means raising our voices for them through our representatives, through our senators, and through the White House. And we all need to get a sheet of paper out and write it to the White House, copy it to your senators, copy it to your reps, copy it to the letters to the editor of your local newspaper. Go have a talk with them. Provide them the information and say, you've got to follow up on the story. Local TV stations, national, you know, cable and the networks. This is an atrocity to, you know, you mentioned probably over 80,000 have died from our Gulf War.
Well, the numbers, I mean, we're looking at 250,000 have died when we look at all the wars since 1990. That's 250,000 have died. That's what the VA documents themselves say. One of the things that, again, I ran into this personal experience, as you know, we had an individual in Washington that gave us a Department of the Army memorandum confirming the health effects from the burn pits dated 15 of April of 2011. And in this memorandum,
they're still fighting just to get a registry.
Correct. And in this memorandum, it ordered, was a direct order for everybody that had been discharged to go to the VA for medical care. Now, after I received this memorandum from Washington, I hand-carried it to the director's office at the Danville VA Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. I gave it to the assistant to the director, and I specifically asked this individual to ensure that doctors and nurses, and my own doctors and nurses providing me my own care, were given this memorandum. Because, again, it confirms the toxic exposures, and it lists the toxic exposures, and very specifically states we're going to see chronic bronchitis, obstructive pulmonary disease, asthma, atherosclerosis, and cardiopulmonary diseases. Exactly what we're seeing here, exactly what we're seeing from the Desert Storm vet, from everything else. And again, what we had found out when I met with my own nurses the other day, they had never been given the memorandum.
Yeah.
So again, we're seeing deliberate and willful hiding of documents confirming the physiologic, the exposures and the physiological effects, and the order to provide medical care being withheld from the practitioners. So what I learned the other day from my own nurse and my own care is she didn't know. She doesn't have the information. They're not being provided the information.
No, and they haven't been for 21 years.
Well, they haven't been back for a lot longer than that because, and again, you and I were directly involved in this stuff. When we look going back to the Vietnam era, Agent Orange has devastated and is currently devastating the Vietnam veterans, and all the individuals associated were exposed. And yet we know back in May in 1990, Admiral Elmo Zumwalt, again, I remember the day at the Institute of Medicine when we're all sitting there, and Elmo, you know, beforehand we were all buddy-buddy goody-two-shoes, and afterwards he was so mad at you and I he could spit nails. But back in May of 1990, he had absolutely, totally confirmed all of the health and environmental effects from Agent Orange in an internal report to the Department of VA. And yet we still see that same problem going. So now what we learn from Vietnam and from Desert Storm, again, and I want to repeat this, was very, very important to understand. After depleted uranium was used, and I was called up, issued the order by General Schwarzkopf, his chief of staff, to go up and clean this mess up, the very first thing that came up and said, oh my God, depleted uranium is Agent Orange of the 90s. We now are seeing horrific health effects. We're seeing denial, continued denial of things, even though the internal reports totally confirm all the health and environmental effects. And yet what we find out now, again, with the Research Advisory Committee, and you cited all the points, they have come back and voted no confidence in the Department of Veteran Affairs because of the failure to provide medical care and do what's right. I mean, the American public, I mean, Denise, you and I remember, who was it? Somebody said we had to mobilize God's army in order to get this done right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to take a lot of prayer, but it takes action. You know, and I know the President of the United States was informed, because Dennis Kucinich and Congressman Tim Johnson from Illinois both ensured that Senator Obama, while he was still a Illinois senator, had no knowledge of this, was totally informed. I mean, he was totally informed of everything that's been going on. But somehow, all this stuff has gone away in the dodo bird. And we continue to get ourselves involved in more and additional military operations, continue to use more and more weapons, continue to destroy the infrastructure of these nations, resulting in horrific American casualties. I mean, what do we need to do to get the American public involved? What do we need to do to get this to stop? I mean, I wish I had the answer. I mean, I know you've been searching for the answer and totally involved for a long time. And now the Research Advisory Committee has made it very clear, very, very clear, that they're frustrated also. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Where do we go? What do we do?
It's back to the Hill in D.C. and the election year, when we know that there's divisions between both parties, can't get them to come together. Probably nothing's going to happen on appropriations till after the election. They're backed up on the appropriations bill. They can't agree on anything. And yet we have the health of former service members at risk and has been at risk in a growing and growing tragedy. It takes, you know, every single person we can contact. I mean, I've contacted Gold Star families, bless their heart, they've lost their loved one. Gold Star Wives, Blue Star, the motorcycle groups. You know, we have reached out and educated, you know, gotten them on the communication line to help us, to help make phone calls to the Hill, demand an investigation, demand that this stop. We need it stopped. We need it to go in the direction that has been recommended now by the VA RAC and by the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Science, and that was Dr. Stephen Hauser out of University of California, San Francisco. We need to get everybody on board with that message.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, another hot topic tonight. Have a good evening, and thank you for listening to Warrior Connection. Progressive Radio Network is moving forward. Keep coming with us and learn, get educated, and act. Thank you, and good night.